At Evernorth Health Services, we believe costs shouldn't get in the way of life-changing care. And we're doing everything in our power to make it possible. Behavioral health solutions that also keep your projections at their best? It's possible. Pharmacy benefits that benefit your bottom line? It's possible. Complex specialty care that cares about your ROI? It's possible. Because we're already doing it. All while saving businesses billions. That's Wonder made possible. Learn more at evernorth.com/wonder.
It's the weekend. There is John Givens hosting this week, and I'm joined by Lizzie Doyle, by Mo Stewart, and by Andy Heaton. It's action-packed as always. Coming up later in the show, we've got information from an Hour for Others charity, which is a fantastic charity here in Liverpool, about what they're up to, and also a gala night that they're planning coming up and ways you can support that. We're also talking about Blackpool and the fantastic victory that they've had off the field, and more promising times on it. So speaking to Andy from the Supporters Trust up in Blackpool about the fantastic, as I say, results they've had over the last few weeks and getting their football club back and what that feels like. And I'm sure Liverpool fans know all about that from our Dark Hicks and Gillette days. And also, Lizzie Doyle's been speaking to Craig Charles, who might be my favourite Scouser, like non-football, Lizzie.
Well, I don't play football.
So basically, he's your second favourite. So you said it should be you?
Yeah.
You're number one. Craig Charles too, then maybe like family number three.
Oh, family needs to go like probably fifth or something. It's Craig Charles and Lizzie Doyle.
Apart from Lizzie Doyle, Mel, who's your favourite Scouser, non-football?
Oh, that's a tough one. Craig is up there.
He's great, isn't he?
I mean, I interviewed him for Be Delito about five or 6 years ago, and I was really, really nervous about it, and he was great.
He's great.
It's the first interview I did where I was able to tell my mum, and she was actually quite excited about it. So
I didn't expect to speak this much about Craig Charles, but I'm going to do it. He was quite like an inspiring figure for me as a kid, like seeing like a Scouser on telly, like a normal one.
Red Dwarf and that.
Funny. Yeah, Red Dwarf and that. Just seeing him being funny, and it was like, look, if he can do it, maybe I can too. And look at me now.
You don't get Scousers in the media, really. So I agree with you. He's one of the few that you do see.
Yeah.
And yeah, he was great. It was my first interview for the Anfield Draft too. So I was like, please be nice. And he was sat in his garden, sunning himself up.
Lovely. Who's your favourite Scouser, Andy?
Oh, favourite Scouser. It's probably you, John.
There you are. Me and Lizzie, well, surprising one vote each.
I got two. Mo agreed. I mean, that counts for something.
You bullied them both, but you know what I mean? Like a dictatorship.
Like, I'm laminating my top five list. Yeah. Put it that way.
No. Non-football, though, it's George Addison, isn't it?
I was going to say George Addison. Good shout.
George, there you are. I like George's house and about a quote about Liverpool water. It's like good water to wash your hair. But there you are. Anyway, we're going to talk about football. We're going to talk about the international duties and the international break, and looking forward to a period that could be quite busy for Liverpool players, and we'll all be keeping our eye on. And so we're going to let you know who's going where, but also use it as a bit of a jumping off point to sort of have a bit of a chat about where each player is. So I've done a bit of maths, Mo, and I've worked out that there's 33 Liverpool players in total going on international duty. I mean, that's a mixture of youth teams and stuff like that. I've got under 18s and all sorts in there. We're travelling 10,000 miles more than Man City. I've been busy. This is why the show wasn't ready till 1 minute after it was meant to start.
10,000 miles is a lot.
Less than Man City. I mean, in total.
Yeah, okay.
You know, but the add up. One fella, though, is not going to Mo Salah, and I want to have a bit of a chat about Mo, because 1 month ago we were like, brilliant, Mo Salah's not going away from Egypt. That sounds fantastic. But actually now, is there an argument that it might be good if he was going?
I mean, there's definitely an argument to say him playing football without the pressure of Liverpool and the title race might spark him back into it. But we have to remember the reasons why he decided not to play there in the first place.
They've got their own pressures.
Yes, it was kind of like a frying pan into a fire scenario in terms of his old legal wrangles around his images on the plane from the World Cup. Like, I don't think have been resolved yet, as well as the pressure he has from being the talisman of Egypt. So I think having a few days with his feet up, maybe watching Russian Doll on Netflix.
Is that what you'd recommend?
Yeah, definitely.
If you were Mo Salah, what would you watch over the weekend, Lizzie?
Do you know...
Craig Charles.
A bit of Sex in the City, maybe, change things up a little bit. Just take it easy. It's an easy watch.
Think it's better he does that than goes away with Egypt, would you say?
It depends. I think we don't know what his mentality is. It's probably going to be quite hard for him to see other players going off and playing. And we could say it's a welcome break, but for him, will he be looking at everyone else going, oh, I wish I was out there playing? I'm not too sure. Personally, as a Liverpool fan, I'm happy that he's not, because it always seems to me that when everyone goes on international, they come back injured or broken or in some sort. But I think as well, maybe it would have been nice for him to go, because I think he probably could have scored for Egypt. And that might have just given that little bit of confidence, even though it's not for Liverpool.
Yeah.
If he went and scores a hat-trick on international, or two goals, one goal, whatever, that could have really helped us.
Maybe you should just go to the park.
Yeah, I was literally going to say that. just come down to Mystery Mo. I'm sure
Mo will let a couple in. You know what I mean? He's good like that.
But in all seriousness, one thing that we do know about him is he's very family orientated.
Yeah.
So I'd like to think that this is a time when they can kind of close ranks a little bit, so he can kind of like recuperate within the bosom of his family, whether he brings some of his other parents and stuff over as well and has like a real kind of family gathering. I don't know, but that's what I would hope he's doing. He's trying to recharge himself physically and mentally and just be around love at this point, because it's a very stressful time for him.
It's beautiful. Be around love. Eden Hazard's been on, Andy. he says he was asked about players he looks up to in world football, and he listed four. He said Luka Modric, who's a world player of the year, Cristiano Ronaldo, who's quite good, Lionel Messi, who's very good, and Mo Salah. And they were his four. And then he said, but this about Mo. Mo Salah is one of my good friends. I don't know where these people make mates, but fair play.
Probably when at Chelsea.
Ah, there we are. That makes sense. Okay, thanks, Lizzie. anyway, Mo Salah is one of my good friends, and he's doing something incredible. I try and look at this player and try and reach that level. It's interesting that Eden Hazard, one of the best players in the world, is talking about reaching Mo Salah's level. It shows he's really good at football.
Yeah, it does. Yeah, it does. And I think I've said this before. I think sometimes you can be a little bit too close and in like this bubble, and you don't really appreciate how good a player is. I think, you know, I think we have it sometimes with Salah Sadio Mane last year. Now look at him go now. But even though it's just like he's just our Sadio, when I think everyone in Europe's turning around looking at him going, bloody hell, this kid's numbers are insane. I think Mo, he's in poor form, but he's not in great form. But I think to rattle off those names and put Mo in that category is absolutely justified, given what he's done, not just for Liverpool. And it's funny you mentioned Egypt there. I mean, I know they didn't have the greatest tournament, but to actually qualify for the World Cup under that kind of pressure is absolutely ridiculous. And for that to be jet broadly on his shoulders, as well as all the political machinations going on in the background, shows the kind of character he is. And I think with Hazard, surprised. I didn't know that. I didn't know Hazard had said that until you just read it out. And surprised.
I've been busy, mate.
What I'm saying is, it was surprising that he said that. It's not something. Yeah. So when you were saying Luka Modric, Cristiano Ronaldo, Lionel Messi, and he goes, yeah, teams that like, yeah, oh, they're players from teams he'd like to sign for. And then he goes, I'm Mo Salah. You're like,
maybe he wants to sign for Liverpool.
Well, maybe. I wouldn't get in our team, though, would he?
Well, you know.
Where's he get in?
Well, you could try. Work hard in training, see how you get on.
We need some more options off the bench, Andy.
Yeah, yeah. Can you imagine?
Well, speaking of our fellas on our bench.
Stop going against us.
Mo, the next one's Jadon Sakiri. He also stays. These are all the fellas who aren't going anywhere first before we get on to the people who are. He's got an inflammation of the pubic area, according to the Swiss report.
Very specific.
I'm absolutely amazed that they decided to go with that as an explanation.
I think it's a groin strain. I think that's what.
I mean, I know that, but obviously the way they put it,
yeah,
it just kind of, it leaves us so wide open to just, you know, wild speculation. And
imagine jokes. That on your sick note. Can't make it into the day, boss.
Yeah, I mean,
well,
you
know, it's a big area. Anything could be inflamed.
Well, also, I mean, it's different on different people as well.
I was going to say,
some are bigger than others.
I don't want to doubt.
As I know too well from secondary school PE. Why do you all too go? Yeah, all too depressingly. Look at those large, bigger boys. Where are we going? Is this free?
I'm not sure. try to drag it back out of the swamp.
Yeah, chest hair, I'm talking about. Chest hair.
Basically, the reason why it seems a bit funny is because it just seems almost like it's made up, even though it's not. Even though it's an actual official medical term, because it's out of the ordinary. So it's like, normally you'd say, yeah, he's got a groin problem. Or like with Trent, it was just a back injury.
Yeah.
And there's a vagueness about those. And when they're vague, you tend to think, okay, there's nothing wrong there.
But Switzerland, they've got two qualifiers. They're like proper games they're playing. Mm. So you think, well, it must be something serious. And I wonder whether it's something that he's has been affecting him anyway, and that's maybe why he hasn't been used so much. I don't know.
It wouldn't surprise me. I mean, wouldn't be the first time either that we find out about a player who's been carrying an injury like 2 months after it began. I mean, even as I mentioned with Trent, they mentioned that pretty much Vincent went off at Burnley, and we weren't sure if he was going to start or not. He's been managing it since then, so. Klopp's kind of like that. He will give you the information about people that he wants you to give information, and he'll keep everything else, which is want to do, obviously. But I would have thought, personally, if there was some kind of injury reason as to why Shaqiri wasn't playing, it might have taken some of the pressure off both him and the player to have mentioned that earlier.
Okay, Naby Keita misses out as well, Lizzie. Guinea have already qualified from their African Cup of Nations group. They should finish top ahead of Ivory Coast, which is pretty decent, so they've normally got a good team. So assuming this one's just a bit of a precaution, although maybe he could have gone with, you know, having a nice game of footy somewhere as well, but you'd think we would have already qualified with him missing the last game and just kind of sat him out.
He didn't travel to Munich, did he?
No,
so maybe it is a case of sitting it out because It was a shock to everyone that he didn't go to Munich, I think. Not that he wasn't going to, you know, not play or whatever, but I think the fact that he didn't even travel with the team, we thought, oh, was this something serious, you know, if to have been left out the squad completely. So for me, I think it's a good option to keep Naby here. Yep. And in a way, if they've been hampering a bit of an injury, Klopp does have to say so over that and over the player to protect the player. Mm-hmm. And like you said, if they've pretty much qualified, and to go ahead of Ivory Coast is good going, by the way. I think that's the right decision for Keita to stay. It might, even just to get in training and stuff, maybe get his head down, because we don't know what he's feeling like mentally after having a good run of games and then being dropped and then struggled to get back in the side. So hopefully it does him good to stay.
The next one is pulled out to Trent, and he's pulled out with a back injury that I think I mentioned before. It feels like one that maybe we've decided we want to be careful with. I had a little look before, and this time 2 years ago, he'd made 9 Liverpool appearances. Now he's on 74, and he's been to the World Cup, and it just feels like it's one maybe to now and the end of the season. They've just decided to take it easy on.
Yeah, our glass back there. We know from previous conversations how well Klopp gets on with Southgate, and it just seems like they've had a conversation in the background going, look,
we'll give you one of him and Jordan.
Yeah. but there's an argument there, because his form's not been poor, but it's not been brilliant, has it? And if the indicators are that he's tired and a little bit, but that doesn't do any good for England anyway, long term, does it? Because if he carries on and if he goes in and there is a genuine injury or an underlying and it gets worse, then that doesn't do England any favours, doesn't do Liverpool
been
any favours.
Something, hasn't he,
it's the business end of the season as well. I mean, maybe if it's September, October, you go, wow, I'll go. But, you know, so, yeah, no, I'm sound with it. It's, at least he didn't try and pull the dentist like Andy Robinson.
We're coming on to that. Don't get ahead. He's also signed a new boot deal. We should say congratulations to Trent for that. With Under Armour.
Still with Under Armour?
Yeah, so he signed a boot deal. I didn't know Under Armour did boots, but then I suppose that's the whole point of these things, isn't it? That's where they get the big money.
This time next year, you will know.
I know. I'll be strutting around the office in them. Never mind the football pictures. There's a nice story in the Echo today as well that apparently he's going to use the money from this to kind of fund community football pitches as well. He's buying plots of land over the summer to basically make sure that the next Trent Alexander-Arnold happens. Everyone's nodding. He's a lovely man, isn't he?
Yes,
he's
great.
Do you know what?
No, it's fine. No, we'll all say how lovely he is. Taking it turns.
No, do you know what? I've been trying to think. I don't even know who England are playing, and does it matter? I've just been trying to figure this out.
Someone else.
Is it a qualifier? Is it a friendly?
2020 qualifiers, Luxembourg, that's it. I mean, essentially, England are a group where they should win. So at this stage,
I wasn't sure of the importance of a missing out, you see.
I think the only real importance is people wanting to get in the starting 11 for the Nations League that happens in June. That's really it. I mean, if England are going into these games thinking we need to perform, otherwise we're not going to qualify, then all of the summer last year was a mirage as far as I'm concerned.
Yeah. Back to saying how lovely Trent is anyway. Okay. I'll let you go first.
No, genuinely, I think it speaks so well of him that he can be so young and be so he'd be so concentrated on not only his present, but the future and the wider scope of the world in his own community. Because I remember what I was like at that age. I could barely keep 2 shoes on. And he's out there making multi-million pound deals to secure the future of football. And he knows better than most people how important that is to have that outlet. Because let's face it, we're in a situation where we can't always rely on the people whose job it is to make sure that these things happen, to make these things happen.
Yeah.
And he's in a really rare position. And probably want to give a shout out to Under Armour as well, because they've done something very similar with a lot of their American athletes, like Steph Curry, stuff like that. So they would have made it a lot easier for him to go out and do something like this. So yeah, big up to them too.
Sound? Yeah, nice fella.
Oh, he's lovely. He's just lovely. And I'm not, it's no coincidence as well that he's in pretty much every interview he talks about his ambition as being Liverpool captain. And I'm not saying he's doing this to show face.
I don't know when it's come from. I just saw it on our Instagram.
Yeah, it's not a show face thing when I say that. I just mean it's his intentions are absolutely in the right place. And why wouldn't you want a captain for your team that's going out and doing all these amazing mm-hmm. things for the community? And, you know, he's from here. Like, he understands what we're about. He understands the city. He understands the needs of the city. You know, there's a lot of very poor people around the Anfield area mm-hmm. Where that multi-billion, you know, pound company sits. And, you know, he's not blind to it. Right. And I really like the way that he does take responsibility. He's a very young man. He's 20 mm-hmm. and he's already thinking, you know, he's thinking that way when most 20-year-olds are out just getting pissed on a student night out. And he's got a lot of responsibility, but I think he enjoys the responsibility, and you can tell that he wants to take the responsibility further in his future. And you know what? Good luck to him, and I hope it pays off.
Sound any, Andy?
Yeah, yeah. He was also very good when he come and spoke to us last year. If you remember, he was talking a bit more about his charity work, and it's not just community pitches. And it's very, very easy to be cynical in this age about they're doing this for good headlines and one thing and the other. And I know we're going to get on to, there's another section of the show to come in, but he's done this quietly as well for years. Without seeking headline or anything like that. And he's just done it because the way he's been brought up and his family and one thing and the other, and the stuff he's done, we're going to speak about later, the stuff he's done for others as well. For instance, you know, it's just, it's nice to see. We're always dead proud when a lad from Liverpool comes through and makes it, but I think there's an extra little layer on top when they come across and they're actually just really lovely young fellas, or girls for that matter, for Liverpool FC women. So yeah, it makes you proud, and you know, a bit of self-reflection and all that from your own town and all that kind of thing. But fair play to him.
I re-listened to the Trent interview the other week for something else, and at one point asked him about, like, pressure, extra pressure of being, like, a local player, and he just went, nah. Which I really liked. Nah. It was a really, really scouse nah, like I get from Sean when I ask him to do something. I think we'll leave it there for part one. Coming up in part five, we'll be talking about the players who are going away and what they're up to. And we're also hopefully going to find out where Mo nailed the two shoes thing. More of that coming up. But in the next part, we are going to speak to Kev and Jill from An Hour for Others, and we bring up Trent in that as well. This is Trent Loving Show, but why not? And it's John Gibbons now. We're all having a little go today, and I'm just delighted to be joined by Jill and Kev, who are from An Hour for Others charity, who we featured before, but we've just realised we've never actually had you on, so apologies, firstly. But, first of all, hopefully people will know all about An Hour for Others and what you guys do, but if anyone doesn't listen in, can you just give us a quick sort of, you know, brief history of the charity, really, and why it started?
Well, basically, it just started from an idea of mine when, you know, I was sick of, tired of the world around me, just like so much greed, corruption, violence, hatred. I thought, something's got to change here. I said, I don't want to live in this world. I want to live in a better world. And then I thought to myself, but no one's going to come along and wave a magic wand. So I thought, so I've got to sort of change to live that way, if that makes sense. So as a qualified painter and decorator, I just thought to myself, well, my little bit, I can just help a child living in poverty or an elderly person or someone in my community who can't afford the work. For a few hours of my time, I can go in and just decorate a room, and I knew I could improve the living conditions. And then as soon as I had the idea, I just thought, oh my God, I thought anybody in the world could actually do this, where they could just give a little bit back and sort of, you know, help create a little bit of a better world. And when I went away, I just thought like that everybody was just going to like pick up on the idea and then just go away and do it themselves. But they sort of came to me and went, Kevin, that's a great idea, what can I do? And then in the meantime, I'd met Jill then and I told her the idea, and she just absolutely loved it. She'd just been, got a redundancy from a company where she's an accountant. So she said to me, Kevin, she said, you've got this idea is amazing. You've got to, like, I was working in a factory at the time, and I just couldn't keep going backwards and forwards knowing that I had this idea. So Jill just said to me, listen, leave the factory. Let's get this up and running. So she funded me for best part of a year. just to get it off the ground. And like I say, over the last 4 or 5 years, we've been going, so many businesses and individuals and people have been involved, given whatever it is they can. We've made a massive difference in Liverpool.
Yeah, you have made a massive difference. And I think the beauty of it for me is sort of in its simplicity, really, in that, I mean, what you said at the top where, you know, the problems of the country as a whole can seem so insurmountable. They just kind of weigh you down. And the more I look at stuff like Brexit and things like that, it just sort of depresses me, really. Yeah. Whereas, and it just, because not just because of what's going on with, you know, with poverty and things like that in the kind of in the country, but how little you feel like you can influence it. But everyone can help that person on the street, can't they? Everyone can do that. And you can make, might not be able to make the world a better place, but you can make your community a better place.
Well, exactly. And at the end of the day, you know, all as I look at it is that, you know, the kids are the future, and if all as they're seeing all the time is, you know, violence and hatred and divisions and arguments, they're just going to grow up and they're just going to carry that on.
Yeah.
But if they actually look at people, you know, doing stuff, I mean, we go into schools and talk to the schools and tell them about community. Now they're the next generation, so my vision is in like 50, 60, 70 years time, these kids will just be part of their consciousness just to act in this way, because something's got to change, because it's going worse and worse. And why can't it change from grassroots up? Do you know, why can't it change from us making that start?
Yeah, and one of the nice things that's happened, Jill, is obviously the Trent Alexander-Arnold got involved, who I think you knew from when he was a young lad, and he came in and spoke to us and said that, you know, people used to joke saying, oh, Trent, you know, when you're famous, you're going to help us, and he sort of always said, well, I didn't really take it as a joke. I thought, well, yeah, I will, and he's been as good as his 15-year-old will.
Yeah, I've known Trent since he plays with my nephew, Chris, and he was his best friend for years and years. So he grew up in our household, and Trent's family was one of the first families. It was a family friend that we helped, a young girl who was friends with Trent's mum. And they seen her firsthand what an hour for others done, which was 4 years ago. And he hadn't even signed his contract. He was still in under-16s, I think, at the time. Yeah. And he always said that he'd get involved, and he has done.
He had him running around Queen's Drive once, getting toys out of the back of the car in his boxes.
But it's brilliant. But it's inspired a lot of people, and that's what's been nice, isn't it? Yeah. In that, you know, since we've been talking about it, people have said, "Oh, how can we, you know, how can we help? How can we support?" I know there's people around the world who've given tickets and match tickets, things like
crazy,
that. And and it only has to be a small thing, doesn't it? Yeah. It doesn't have to be, you know.
It's the consciousness of everybody. That's the main thing, as Kev mentioned. So even people even thinking about it, that's your job done already. That people are thinking about other people. And as you say, people from around the world, New York, Singapore, Ireland. I mean, we've got our gala coming up, which we'll speak about in a bit. I've got people from seven different countries that are going to be attending.
Yeah.
The word's spreading. We don't want it just in Liverpool. We want it. We want it national, and we want it international. And that's the aim for the next, 4 or 5 years.
And it's true, John, what you say at the end of the day. It is only little small things. It's not about one person doing massive amounts of stuff. It's about every single person just taking responsibility and doing something different and just being a bit of a role model to the kids and, you know, showing them a different way.
Because positive kind of role models in society is huge, isn't it? And I think for a lot of people kind of growing up don't necessarily have that. They might not have it at home for whatever reason. And if you look out and the only people who are making money are drug dealers, to be perfectly frank, then what kind of options do you see?
It's a cycle then. It just becomes a cycle where they just look at it as that's the only way. But like I say, you know, it starts with each and every one of us being that role model and showing the kids a different way. And this is, at the end of the day, like I said before, all you can do is change yourself. You can't change the world, but you can change yourself to be a part of this better world.
So where's the charity kind of at now, really?
So we offer 4 services.
Yeah.
So first service is act of kindness, which is always being an hour for others. So that's whatever anybody's got, football tickets, theatre tickets, whatever it may be that you've got to offer, we'll get it to the people, obviously, that are in need at the time. We also do health and wellbeing groups, and that brings all the health and wellbeing sector together. That's mindfulness, yoga, chefs come in, teach families how to cook healthily on tight budgets. We do that because obesity, diabetes, you know, it's on the rise. NHS gets affected. Communities get broken down because of it. Obesity is the second cause of cancer now. So if we can educate people, all for free in a better, different way, we offer them services.
Yeah.
We have children's groups, which you've just mentioned then. Some children live at home and there's no hope at home. So they go to school and that's the only school, that's the only thing that they'll have as hope. So the children's groups are a 20-week programme where we'll bring them in two nights of the evening from the broken families for whatever reason it may be. And at the end of 20 weeks, they get a scholarship at a dance school, football club, music club, whatever they're interested in, just to give them some social inclusion. Because society, you know, the social value of that for years and years to come is huge.
Of course, yeah.
And
obviously the room refurbishments, which was the initial idea, came from me being a painter and decorator. So we've done all sorts of, you know, kids' bedrooms up, elderly people's houses, you know, where the conditions are poor and it's having an effect on the physical and mental health. So we've got businesses who donate floor and we've got skilled tradespeople. And like Jill said, all them other groups, it's all professional people who are giving their time, you know, to make a difference in the community in various different ways. And it's tackling a lot of like really like issues that are, you know, having a bad impact on our city.
So we're having a party, which is a gala in the Shankly Hotel, yeah. A week Saturday, isn't it?
Yeah.
Week Saturday.
That's right. Yeah, it isn't me, Daddy. Don't worry, me and Neil are doing the auction. So I hope you've set aside 2 hours for that, because Neil's quite the showman on these things. Now it's gonna be a great night, isn't it?
Yeah, we've obviously sold. I think it's 260 places. So that's businesses, individuals, schools, family, friends that are all going to enjoy the evening. Got a lot planned for the night, entertainment. Live bands, auction, presentation about what an hour for others is, and just come together as a celebration every year, just so obviously a thank you as well to everybody that comes.
Yeah, it's a celebration as much as how far you've come, I guess, isn't it? Yeah. Because who could have imagined, like, Kev, when you just had this idea to paint someone's house.
You lads have been here since day one, haven't you? So you've been on our journey with us, haven't you? You've helped us a lot on that, and so you've seen like what we've had to go through and, you know, the sacrifices we've made. But like I say, 5 years down the line, and it's, you know, we've still got a million and one ideas, where it's going to go as well. It's only going to get bigger and better and help more people in Liverpool and beyond.
Brilliant. So if people want to get tickets, can they still come on the night?
Yeah, but I need to know final numbers for Friday, right? Because it's nearly maxed out anyway. Yeah. But if there's any auction prizes that anybody's got, you know, that they'd like to offer for us to be able to raise some cash.
Yeah, so auction prize is probably the best way to help you. If you listen to this, this is out on the Friday. So if the day you listen to it, you do want to come, do get in touch on that day. Mm-hmm. If not, if people want to offer auction prizes, mm-hmm. either get them to us or get them to yourselves.
And anybody with any skills or anything who thinks like they could help us make an impact, then definitely get in touch.
And in terms of people in different places around the world, if someone's listening in America or Australia or whatever, can they still help and get involved?
Yeah, and obviously if they can come over, I mean, obviously, we haven't got no projects where they live and stuff, but we do have people coming over for the football, especially. Yeah. You know, we do have, and one of the things that we do is community groups. So we go out and help community groups with gardening and painting and stuff. Anybody wants to get involved when they're over for the weekends, you know, they can come and get their overalls on.
Kev will show you around.
Yeah.
But nice one for coming in, and I'm really kind of proud of what you've managed to do. And as you say, we've kind of known about it for a long time and have tried to help, but I think what you've done is incredible, and you should be very proud. And I'm looking forward to having a celebration, a glass of champagne, and lose all my money on the crab machines you've got or whatever it is.
One last thing, John. At the minute, the website's just under renovation, so if you do look for us online, the best places is your social medias, your Twitters, your Instagrams, your Facebooks, but the website will be up within 8 weeks.
Fantastic.
Yeah.
Websites that are paying out. Huge thanks to Kevin. Kevin Joe for joining us.
Thank you very much.
I assume now we'll go back to Neil. It's John Gibbons here from the Anfield Wrap, and I'm delighted to be joined on the phone by Andy Higgins from the Blackpool Supporters Trust, who's just told me it's beautiful and sunny as always in Blackpool, but you must be feeling like everyday sunshine at the moment, Andy, because I mean, it's been such a battle with these owners, hasn't it? And a battle for the soul of your football club. Maybe a day that you thought, you know, you were starting to wonder whether it had come, but now, you know, the whole footballing community in the UK really are delighted for Blackpool and what's happened recently over the last few weeks.
Yeah, it's been tremendous, really. Yeah, it's been something we've been anticipating really since the court judgment, which was over a year ago when, you know, it was put on notice to the Oysters that they had to pay this money, but they prevaricated, etc. So yeah, it's been amazing, and it's such a good feeling around the town. You know, people renewing friendships, seeing each other for the first time in years, and it's a sense of vindication, really, that all the hard work and the protesting and all the action that we've taken, it's sort of finally sort of come to fruition, really. Yeah, so it's been great, mate.
Yeah, and you mentioned sort of, you know, friendships and stuff like that, and it does kind of drive people apart, all this, doesn't it? I mean, it happened to us. I mean, we didn't go as extreme as Blackpool did, but under Hicks and Gillette, when the club nearly went into administration and things like that, and you end up arguing with your fellow fan almost, and, you know, your whole week's about what can you do to get rid of owners. And, you know, football's meant to be a laugh. It's meant to be the thing you enjoy, where it becomes kind of this all-consuming thing that stresses you out. And as you say, you end up kind of falling out with each other.
Yeah, well, there's been quite a lot of that, really, because of the boycott we've had at Blackpool. So, you know, the trust and the other groups, we're all trying to bring people together. But, you know, we have had situations where people have been arguing with each other. But like I say, it's meant to be a force for good, a force for unity. So not only the supporters that it's sort of driven apart, some, but only a small amount. It's also families. There's a pal of mine who does a lot of work with the trust. And he said to me, like, since we're boycotted, he only sees his brother probably two or three times a year, whereas he saw him every other week. But we've all got busy lives. And it's that, you know, that softer social network that's sort of just been, has drifted apart, really, where people don't, you know, communicate like they used to. But hopefully, I think this will make us stronger, because we're a stronger unit, Blackpool fans, now. And we all know each other. And we're, you know, we've sort of been brothers in arms for years, a lot of us. And a lot of strong bonds have come out of it. So hopefully, you know, always good to take a positive out of a negative, really, mate.
Yeah, I mean, well, indeed. I mean, that game against Southend must have been special. You know, it's a 96th minute equaliser, which always helps, but nearly 16,000 people in the ground. And as you say, people who may not have seen each other for weeks, months, even suddenly come back. It must have been a special day.
Well, it was. Well, but the irony of it is, after 4 years of boycotting and standing outside home games, giving out leaflets, believe it or not, I flew out of the country the day before on a holiday. So I missed it, but we were over in the Far East. Me and another Blackpool fan who's been, you know, fighting with us all the time. So we watched it on the iFollow thing, and we saw all the social media. But it was great, and the energy in the town has just been palpable since, really, when we've been back. Everyone's been talking about it, saying that it was a more important moment for them on an emotional level than, you know, winning a promotion or going to the Premiership. You know, it was right up there, you know, for lifelong fans. So it was, yeah, a great moment, mate. Absolutely.
I mean, if you could just fill in a few people who might not know sort of the journey it's taken to get here. I mean, it's a sort of an unusual ownership situation, even in the fact that English football has its unusual owners. I mean, it's an ownership family who've sued supporters. It's you know, it's bigger than just owners sort of taking the ball and going home.
Well, yeah, and it depends how long I've got, because I mean, I could bore you for an hour about it. But, you know, I mean, they took over the club in the mid-80s for a pound. He was a bit of a champagne socialist, though, in Euston. As, you know, he was with Eddie Shaw, News International, all that stuff, driving around in his Rolls Royce. So he took over the club. It was in a bad state. He never invested any money. Had his own personal issues where he was sent down for rape of a minor in the mid-90s. So we've never liked him. They've always been a distasteful bunch. I can probably say a bit more now for fear of litigation. They've taken over 200 people to court on litigation, the most litigious family in the UK. But it all went ridiculous when we got relegated from the Premiership. He took a £12 million dividend, and then they started suing the supporters for speaking out, strategically targeting the heads of VST and other supporters groups.
Yeah.
We got to know, you know, thankfully, the spirit of Shankly and the Blue Union through court cases in Liverpool, where they kindly pitched up to supporters and helpers, really, and show solidarity, which, you know, still brings a bit of a lump to my throat, that, because it's, you know, it was really important that that happened for us. Finally, Bellicom, who was kicked, well, and invested some money in the club. It was a court action he brought against the owner, Owen Euston, for unfair and prejudicial shareholder dealing, which finally got to court after a couple of years. And it was, you know, I think it was December 2017, where the court found against the Euston, said, right, you've treated the club like a cash machine, you've more or less embezzled funds, you're disreputable, you're untrustworthy, you know, you've lied all along. So a big judgment of £32 million came against them, which they've avoided paying, and finally had to go back to court again, and now the receivers are in there. So that finally was the green light, that they're finally out, unless something weird happens where they win the lottery and they can buy the club back from the receivers, and that there's a green light for the fans to go back.
And that's all you want, isn't it? All you want is to be able to watch your football team on a Saturday afternoon, and that's been kind of taken away for so many people, as you say. You're still going down there, but handing the leaflets out, and now, you know, after a little bit of a false start because you were on holiday, you've got that back.
Yeah. No, absolutely, and that's what we want, so the community to be united and enjoy the football and re-establish the bonds that, you know, that we've lost, unfortunately. But it's bigger questions within football. We're hopefully going to harness that energy, and we had one of our representatives down at the EFL meeting in London yesterday, and we're still going to do what we can, because Bolton are in the mire at the moment, yeah. Obviously, aren't they? The problems with Coventry with Sisu, which is just disgraceful. Duchesne, what he's doing down at Charlton, said the EFL should buy the club. There's too many rogue owners around football these days, and it's too important a community asset, as you'll know far too well, for these people to get involved with our game. So hopefully that can be a positive we can take out. And, you know, we're all over the EFL like a cheap suit, like we have been from day one. They must bloody hate us, really, the EFL. You know, the amount of protests we've done. But it needs to be done, doesn't it? You can't have them dictating what happens to our football clubs and just looking after the owners, really. It's just not on, is it?
No, absolutely not. Absolutely not. But yeah, as you say, you fought that fight and you've got there, and now you've got just a football team to enjoy. And to be fair, not done too badly this season with everything kind of going on. You're sitting in ninth with an outside chance of the playoffs.
That's right. Well, we've got seven games left. We're away at Bradford this weekend. We've got a few sort of close ones. Really, it's in our division, the third tier, it's a race for the last promotion place. I think the top five are more or less secure now. Yeah. So it's between about three or four teams. There's the likes of Coventry, ourselves, I'm forgetting that, Fleetwood Town are in there, and another couple really, Doncaster Rovers. So it's like a mini league, isn't it, for the last seven games. So you never know. We've only ever gone up through the playoffs, you know, Blackpool.
Is that right?
In the past 30 years. We're the most successful playoff team ever. We never get automatic. I think the last time that happened was back in the late 80s. So we've only gone up the last four or five times through the playoffs. So,
oh, so you got pedigree. And just before we finish, how's Jay Spearing getting on? Birkenhead's finest. How's he doing?
Yeah, he's doing well. He's quite a leader in the team. He's done a good bit of stuff on social media as well, saying how good it is to get the good feel-good factor. And one of our pals, he's been a big protester, a guy called Rob Purden. He's done loads of cartoons of the Oystons and put them all over the web. And, you know, we've been doing all that stuff. He was asked to put the first homecoming programme together. So he drew a picture of Jay Spearing. So there's a cartoon of Jay Spearing on the front of our first programme, the game against Southend, which is quite good, isn't it?
Yeah, you know? Not bad at all. Not bad at all.
It looks great, mate. Yeah. So, yeah, he's a big asset to us. So, yeah, hopefully he can help us out.
Well, great to hear Jay's doing well and fighting the good fights as well. But even more importantly, great that Blackpool have got their football club back and onwards and upwards for them as well. But in the meantime, thanks to Andy for joining us on the phone. And yeah, I hope you've enjoyed that update of good news up in Blackpool. It's John Gibbons here with the Redsbet inserts. Redsbet are partnering us throughout the year, and we are delighted they are doing so. They are a betting company with a difference because they give 50% of your losses, so their profits, into fan-related causes. So they've signed some really good checks for fan organisations up and down the country this year. But Redsbet in particular do support Liverpool fan initiatives. So if you do like a bet, have a think about doing it with Redsbet. Obviously, if you do not, if it's not for you, then we wouldn't necessarily encourage you to do so. But if you do already bet and you do edit something that you enjoy, then maybe have a look at Redsbet. They've got some great odds, but as always, gamble aware. Okay, so I've got some Liverpool specials, and I've got Mo Stewart, who's a Liverpool special in himself.
Oh, well, thank you very much.
I'd like to say. I'll just read through a few, and you can say they all seem to be Champions League related, but you say which one of these you fancy. And they've got some international ones as well. We've just done quite a lot of international stuff, but we'll see if we kind of get that far. We'll see what you think of the Champions League ones, first of all. The top one, Liverpool to win the Champions League, 9-2.
Ooh, 9-2. I mean,
I'm surprised how short it is, I will just say. And I'm sure that's reflective across all the bookies as well. Do you think that's a little bit kind of based on the draw?
Partly based on the draw, partly based on the fact that we did get to the final last year.
Yeah, we always forget how good we are generally. Yeah.
And also, I think we are the kind of team that people will have a punt on because we are capable of pulling off those kind of miracle runs like we did see last season.
Yeah, we're four favourites. I've just had a look at the general odds. City are the favourites, then Juventus, Barcelona, and then us. Although generally 4-1 across the board. So if you do fancy 9-2, then Redsbet seem to be one of the only ones who are doing that. So yeah, decent odds there. But four favourites, Liverpool at the moment. A Liverpool-Man United semi-final is 4-1.
Yeah, I can't see that happening. I mean, I'd have thought it would be longer to try and turn people into it because I think anyone who's been keeping an eye on Barcelona recently will have noticed they're in quite good form.
Mm-hmm.
And they've pretty much got La Liga sewn up. So they're going to be able to put all of their energies into that tie. And as good as Manchester United were to go away into Paris and win, I can't see them repeating the feat.
Okay, maybe this one will tempt you more. Liverpool-Man City final, 11-2.
You know what? Just because of how this season's played out, I do kind of fancy that. And we are obviously in different halves of the draw. As much as I just said all about Barcelona and how good they are, the one thing that we do have over Manchester United is we have memories of beating Barcelona in the Nou Camp. And there's a couple of two of their players, maybe one who's more key than the other, who's going to have quite an emotional reaction to coming back to Anfield if it happens. So maybe we can play on that. So I fancy us to get there. Obviously, City are clear favourites from the other side of the... Although, if it is a semi-final against Juventus, I would quite like to watch those games.
Yeah, so it's 11-2 Liverpool City final. So if you're thinking that might happen, you could also get 12-1 on Liverpool to beat Man City in the Champions League final.
Ooh, yeah, that extra one. That might be the one.
12-1's all right.
I'm not sure I could really try to envisage and lost another loss in the final. So I'm all out 12-1. Have a happy day.
So that's the one they go for. That's the one that gets the most seal of approval. There's lots of others. If you fancy Spurs to get to the final, if you fancy Juventus to get to the final, there's lots more of that going on as well. Or if you just want a straight bet on Liverpool to reach the Champions League final, you can get that as well. That is 8-5. There's also lots of specials on, as I say, Liverpool players to score in these friendlies. So you can get Divock Origi, Virgil van Dijk, Wijnaldum, Lovren, Alisson to save a penalty against Panama, which is 17th. It's an interesting one.
Brazil to give away a penalty against Panama.
Maybe that's why it's so long. If you just wouldn't you be fuming if Panama got a penalty but he picked the other fella?
Oh my goodness. Yeah. And they didn't even save it.
Yeah, you'd be absolutely fuming. So loads of other specials on there. Redsbet.com do have a little look. As I say, if you do bet and you fancy supporting them as they do support Liverpool Football Club related causes, then do give them a look. But if gambling's not for you, then that is completely fine. And also, we would encourage everyone to be gamble aware and gambleaware.com for much more information on that. But in the meantime, thanks to Mo, back to the show.
It's the Weekender and I'm joined on the line by one of my favourite DJs and fellow Scouser Craig Charles. Craig, how are you?
Hi, Lizzie. I'm good. I'm really good. I'm actually sat in my garden and the sunshine's brilliant.
Oh, I'm so jealous. I'm like stuck in a dingy studio while we're overlooking, our office overlooks the pier head. So the water looks dead calm. It's dead sunny. And I'm sat. Well, listen, it's a pleasure to be sat in here talking to you, so I don't mind too much.
Good on you.
So, Craig, we've got you on because we want to talk about the Six Music Festival that's coming to Liverpool next week. Obviously, you're on Six Music Weekly. You're from Liverpool. So what does it mean to the city to host this festival? Why did Six Music choose Liverpool?
Look, it's a no-brainer, really. I mean, I can't believe we haven't been before because it's Liverpool's such a musical city. You know, we've gone to like very musical cities. We've gone to Belfast, we've gone to Bristol, we've gone to Newcastle, Glasgow. So it's only right that Liverpool, I think it should have been further up the pecking order. It should have come to us first because it's got such a rich musical heritage from the Beatles and the Mersey Beat all the way through all those bands that came out in the late 70s, early 80s, sort of Echo, Teardrop, Wah, The Icicle Works, Cook the Books, Pale Fountains, Wild Swan. There were just so many bands. Frankie Goes to Hollywood, Dead or Alive, and they were all in the charts. At one stage, I remember the top 40 had about 14 Liverpool bands in the charts, and it was such an exciting time. And you know, we've continued that through the 90s and noughties, bands like the Lars and the Coral and stuff like that, and Space. So it's only right that the Six Music Festival comes from Liverpool. In fact, it should come from Liverpool every year.
I'm with you on that. I was going to say, with you being from Liverpool, is there anything in particular that you want to sort of show off when it comes to this festival, in terms of, I don't know, whether it's the venues, the local artists? You've just mentioned the Coral. I'm actually sat here in a Coral t-shirt right now. What is it about the festival? Obviously, like, you being from Liverpool, what do you want people to get from it in terms of when they come here?
I just want them to experience the vibe of Liverpool. I mean, I play the Camden Fair, and we have about 1,500 people in there when I play. I play it a few times a year, and we have it packed out, and people are mad for it. They're up for it. They go bananas. They party hard. And there's like no trouble. Everyone's got a smile on their face, throwing moves, busting shapes. And it's like, and it's just that vibe. And I think people who've not been to Liverpool before, they need to experience a night out in Liverpool, because it can be the funniest, the most exciting night of your life.
And you've just said Camp and Furnace there, some of the venues that are being used. I've been to see you many a times in the Camp and Furnace, but like there's also Invisible Wind Factory, all these sort of, you know, disused warehouses that are now being turned into music venues, Hangar 34, 24 Kitchen Street. There's a real emerging scene on Liverpool, isn't there, at the minute?
There was. I mean, there used to be the Temple and stuff like that, which was an old warehouse, and it's really great that people getting hold of these spaces and turning them into happening events, because it was for far too long those places have been shut down and dusty and boarded up and all that. And it's great to see that aspect of it. I mean, I think Liverpool, it doesn't have to always be the Cavern, you know, Mackie Street and all that. I mean, there's loads of space in Liverpool. There's loads of music. There's loads of bands, and it's great to have places to play. And do you know what? I mean, Liverpool people like going out at the weekends.
So, we do. We absolutely love it.
You've got a ready-made audience, you know what I mean?
I like what about this music festival, that they are using places that are a bit different, what you've just said. It doesn't have to always be the Cavern. And we've spoken about heritage, but it doesn't have to always be about the Beatles. There's so much to this city, and there's so many venues that can be used to host some of these amazing artists. I mean, I've got a couple of names here, like... I think Hot Chip is an absolute standout for me, and they're playing in the Olympia, by the old Grafton.
I know, by the old Grafton. I mean, Hot Chip, I'm looking forward to seeing them if I can make it. I'm looking forward to seeing Cinematic Orchestra. They're really, really cool. Crafty Cuts always turns me on. Anna Calvi. I mean, there's loads of. Six Music's a really eclectic station, but it's a radio station run by music lovers, for music lovers, you know. So all the people on the station, all the DJs are massive fans of them all, because they all put their heart and soul into the music they play. They're not just playing a playlist and not being into it, you know what I mean? So it's a great radio station to work on. I've been on it for 17 years now.
Mm.
17 years, ouch. And it just feels like the coolest station in Europe, to be honest.
I think I completely agree with you. I love Six Music, and like I say, the lineup really reflects Six Music for me. I think it's great. There's a mention for some of the DJs as well on the Friday night. Too many DJs, Erol Olcan. You're playing as well, aren't you? So you've got two gigs on the Saturday.
I'm doing the radio show. I'm also doing a Talking Heads piece with me and Matt Everett, the first time. And he does like people like Pink Floyd and the Rolling Stones and all that. So it's a bit of an honour to get that. So I'll have to think of something interesting to say, Lizzie. So I'm doing that, a big interview, and I'm playing the Wind Factory, which I've never played before. I've never actually been to the Wind Factory.
It's great.
What's it like?
It's massive. So, like I say, I've been to see it a couple of times in Camp and Furnace when it's being sold out. I think it's a bigger room than Camp and Furnace. I quite like it because it's on the derelict side of the docks, which I find quite intriguing. So it also takes people to a place where they wouldn't usually go. The Wind Factory's great. I think you'll really enjoy it. And you've got Elliot Hutchinson from Dig Vinyl, is that right?
Yeah. Dick Vinyl, he's playing with me, Elliot Hutchison. We've got the Renegade Brass Band on stage as well. It's a late one, this. It's like 2 till 4. But the clocks go back in the middle of the
gig. It's fine. It's Mother's Day the next day,
so
but your mum will understand.
Think it is, you know? Anyway, you know what my gigs are like. It's no sleep till way past bedtime.
Exactly, and that's the way it should be, especially when you're playing funk and soul. And as an avid listener of your show, I noticed that you've done a chunk of funk dedicated to this. I listened to it the other day. It was brilliant from your producer. And it was all Beatle themed, weren't it? There was a lot of Beatles in it, but there was also "Say We Can Work It Out" by Stevie Wonder. I think it's definitely worth a listen.
Oh, it's all right. It's a great. That's done by by a chap called Sam Redmore, brilliant DJ. Works out of Birmingham mainly. Plays the Hare and Hounds with me in Birmingham a lot. He's played with me in Liverpool before, and yeah, I said to him, "Come on, do a Beatles trunk of funk," and he's made it so funky. And he's used a lot of sort of Black American people, as you say, Stevie Wonder and stuff like that, singing the Beatles as well. But it's such a groovy 30 minutes. He's a genius, that kid.
It's brilliant. And there's a version of A Day in the Life that you play that I still don't know where to get my hands on.
I share so much music, but like sometimes, you know, I'll hear something on the internet or something like that, and I'll sort of like rip it off there, and then all of a sudden I'll write it on a label, and a few weeks later I don't even know where I've got this music. I'm also dead lucky in that, you know, I've been doing this for such a long time now, and people send me stuff, and sometimes they're white labels and you don't actually know what they are, and you can't read the guy's handwriting in ballpoint pen on the label and stuff like that. So I'm dead lucky that I get access to a load of really cool music, and I just love sharing it. But sometimes I can't tell you who it's by.
I absolutely am on board with that, because, you know what, I'd listen to it all the time. But I know if I go to one of your shows, I'll be able to hear it. So I'll be waiting out for it. Just before we go, Craig, you're a big fan of the Reds.
I certainly am. Come on, Liverpool. What a year, what a season we're having.
What do you think of it so far? Like, how are you feeling at the minute? Or how, if the newspapers were to ask you this question, how is your bottle?
I'm always quite anxious. I never believe we've won it until we've won it. I just think that Manchester City are such an exceptional footballing side that just to be mentioned in the same breath as Manchester City is an honour for Liverpool. And to be neck and neck, just 1 point behind at this stage in the season with a team like City, who I think are probably the best footballing side in the world, better than Barcelona even, and having beaten them last year and stuff like that, just to be talked about in the same breath as City is a real honour for Liverpool. And I've got a feeling that we can just go and do it. I mean, it's like, trouble is, I can't. You have to look at where City are going to drop points, then you see them 2-0 down at Swansea at half time, and you think, wow, well, you know, they are vulnerable. So I've just got my fingers crossed. And Salah had a bit of a rest now. Well, he certainly had a bit of a rest while he's been playing 90 minutes.
Well, you know what? If Manny's doing the business.
Yeah, but if both of them are doing the business and Firmino chips in, well, God, we could be unstoppable in the last part of the season.
And we've got the potential, you know, Champions League quarters. How are you feeling about the Champions League?
I don't think we should take Porto too lightly, because they're there for a reason. You know, they've earned their spot at the big table. So, but if you can get through Porto, I mean, Man United or Barcelona, but wouldn't it be great if we had it against Man United? I would love that.
I said the same thing and I got slaughtered for that. I said, bring them back to Anfield and we'll show them who's boss. Happy to do that all day.
Yeah, definitely, man.
Craig, thanks so much for joining us. Obviously, he is hoping the Reds go on to do the business, but 6 music festivals happening here in Liverpool from Friday the 29th of March till Saturday the 31st of March. Sunday the 31st of March, sorry. And you can catch Craig on the Saturday. All the ticket information is bbc.co.uk/6musicfestival with all the lineup. Craig, it's been a pleasure and I hope you enjoy the festival.
Thank you, Lizzie.
It's great that with Craig Charles and Lizzie. Do try and support the Six Music Festival while it's in Liverpool. Absolutely loads going on. I'm doing something at Central Station as well. If anyone wants to pop in and say hello.
Is this the Maserail thing?
Yeah, Maserail Sound Station. Yeah, it's part of the Six Music this year as well. It's a really good thing that Maserail do actually sponsor this thing and being able to run it. And I'm hosting it. Yeah. 3 p.m. till 8 p.m. in Central Station. It's the gig I dreamed of, Mel.
I might actually have to come down there for it.
Well, I mean, hopefully lots of you come and say hello because I'm going to be there for 5 hours. 11 bands on. The bands are really good. I'm looking forward to introducing them and saying nice things about all of them. I've got some old friends and a few musicians I don't know yet as well. So that should be good. But as I say, Six Music Festival, absolutely loads going on. Something we didn't mention in that slot that has been added since then is that John Grant, who Mo likes a lot, is playing Manford Hall on the Friday, which would be a really good gig. But yeah, support Six Music while it's here. There's loads going on. Free stuff, paid stuff, and it's all great, and it's good that it's in Liverpool, so we want them to come back. Anyway, so more football now. I'm going to talk about the players who are going away on international duty, and we'll start with England. This is where we left, and on Jordan Henderson. He stays in the England squad, Mo, which is quite interesting, despite missing the last game. It suggests that Klopp is happy for him to go, although he wouldn't have done it. There's an interesting article as well in the Daily Mail today on how much... It's all about how much of a lead the Gareth Southgate sees him as in that England squad. The headline is, "The shouty general Gareth Southgate can't live without," which, I'm not sure about many of those words, but I mean, what the article's saying is that, you know, Harry Kane might be the captain, but it's Henderson who's his general kind of on the pitch, and we underestimate that a little bit about Jordan, don't we?
I think so, and I think it's something that we look at sometimes when he's in a red shirt and we think of that kind of captain element as being more to do with his interaction with the referees rather than the rest of his team, and people kind of criticising him for that. But I noticed it during the World Cup that he was one of the people talking on the pitch more often than not, and that's how I think he was able to establish himself as the first choice over Eric Dier. I think there's been a lot of headlines around Declan Rice, the fact that he's come in, and a lot of people see him as the future in that position. Mm-hmm. But the fact that Southgate has been so keen to bring in Henderson, because I know I kind of poo-pooed it in the first section, but in his mind, it's still the first game in the qualifiers. They want to set off on a good foot. So in Gareth's mind, at least, is an important game. So he wants to have him, even if he's not going to be playing for both games, he wants to have him in and around the squad, at least while they're doing their preparation.
Yeah, and with these new players, Lizzie, because there's quite a few young players coming in since the World Cup, kind of who haven't made the debut yet. Declan Rice is one of them, and
Hudson-Odoi, and
Southgate, like Jurgen Klopp, obviously sees the value of Henderson with these people. He's seen as a leader as much what he does off the pitch as on it.
Yeah, and I think it is. To me, Jordan Henderson is more of a captain than Harry Kane. I'm not bothered by it at all, but he is the captain. He's like the Lucas when Lucas was here, when Jordan Henderson was wearing the armband, but Lucas was getting all the instructions. And I think he's a good role model. I think he gets to sat down. He's very professional. I think because he's not, you know, a big mouth and we don't need him screaming on the pitch and you know, confronting reporters in an aggressive manner. we don't see him as captain material, but there's a reason why these managers treating Jordan Henderson like this. And Klopp doesn't do anything by mistake. If he wanted to make Van Dijk captain or whatever, he'd make Van Dijk captain, but he still keeps Jordan Henderson there, and that's got to count for something. And he is a good role model for the young lads. And I think we've heard about like the young Liverpool players talking about Henderson quite a lot as well. Yeah, he's a good addition to that England side, and it'll be nice for him to get a game under the belt. And yeah, like the likes of Declan Rice can look at him and aspire to be like him.
There's another interview with Henderson this week, Andy, where he talks about his near misses and how they inspired him to try and kind of get over that. And I mean, it's quite a run he's had when they kind of write it all down. So since he last won a trophy at Liverpool in 2012, just a League Cup win, he's been the runner-up in the League Cup, the Premier League, the Champions League, the FA Cup and the Europa League. And I mean, it's something that can break a footballer or make one, I guess, really, isn't it? And he seems determined to make him, but I mean, he's not the only nearly man at Liverpool, obviously, but I think he's the only one who's part of that 13-14 season, isn't he? Who's kind of still there now. And so he'll be kind of extra determined, if you like, to get something, you know, to get some silverware this season.
So it's his fault then?
No, I'm not saying that.
Common denominator and all that.
I'm not saying that
did
at all.
Did he start all of those games, though? I'm not sure
I'm
he
only
did.
Kidding. No, I think he's been very, very unlucky. And I think you're right, to come that close. And also, I suppose, with England in the World Cup as well, because he was part of that squad. It's a funny one, isn't it? Because the way form and teams turn, the way cycles go, you just get the sense that if Liverpool won one, you know, or he won one, it would be the start of two and three and four and five and six, how these things go.
Like Andy Murray.
Yeah.
With majors.
You know what? I'm heartbroken. Off the subject, I'm heartbroken for Andy Murray the way it's gone with his hip.
I think he's all right now. I think he's boxed it.
Hopefully.
Yeah, but he said...
to come back, isn't he?
He's looking to come back, but he said if he ranks up in the top 20s, he'd be happy, hasn't he? Basically, his days as an elite. Anyway, but... yeah, go ahead, Andy.
Thinking of you, Andy.
Me and you. You do wonder if there is a mental fatigue about him, as much as they say it's not affecting him, or it is affecting him. I mean, I'm still of the opinion with Jordan Anderson that the moment we got, I know the Steven Gerrard slip thing, but I think what was a massive blow was when he got himself sent off against Manchester City in the last few minutes. I think he was in probably the best form of his Liverpool career at the time. And I think people kind of overlooked it because the way that Liverpool played and it was all gung-ho, he was very much a shield for Steven Gerrard. And yeah, I wonder whether that plays on his mind a little bit too. But as you said, you know, I mean, time to put that run to bed at the end of the season.
Hopefully, yeah.
With the European Cup.
Yeah, both of them. Just win both of them. That'd be sound, Jordan, if you can box that. So Scotland, we mentioned before, Andy Robinson, he was left out of today's away game in Kazakhstan for a dental operation. I did notice they're playing on a plastic pitch as well, Lizzie, which...
Not good for tea.
Football.
Famously. Robbie Fowler, two in the grass there.
I just think it's another reason why Andy Robinson might have thought, I will swear, there's plastic pitches, footy players hate them, don't they?
Never been so happy for someone to have a dentist.
Apparently he's not ruling himself out as San Marino on Sunday, which makes me think he just wants a goal.
Yeah, or he could just say, you know, his tooth's hurt, I need a bit more paracetamol.
I mean, he's vital for us between now and the end of the season, isn't he, Lizzie? I mean, Alberto Moreno feels like he's literally on a plane to Italy now, isn't he? He's there, his mind's elsewhere, he's hardly played. We've got this one game where he's suspended where, you know, Milner or maybe even Gomez might have to do something with him. But generally speaking, that's the only game you want to miss in between now and the end of the season, isn't it?
Literally. So if he has to go and have his dentist appointment now, I'm okay with that, because he is literally one of Liverpool's most important players in this next running. And like you've just said with Moreno, I literally just liked a picture of him and Lucas in front of the Spanish Steps. Mm-hmm. You know, he's already there taking in the sights of Rome. And the thing is, if just quickly on Moreno, he is a professional. You've got to hope that if he does play in that game, you know, he'll just get his head down and do a job, because he's got to try and put on a performance for the team he wants to play for. But that is the only game now that Andy Robertson can miss for Liverpool. Yeah. Like Milner's great. We all love Milner, and he can do a job at left back, but no one is Andy Robertson other than Andy Robertson. No. And him and Trent should be so proud of themselves as to what they have made that position, because it's near on impossible to fill in for someone like them, who was so defensively sound, but the way that, you know, that their attack and manner and the way that they use space on the wings, there's literally no one I would replace them with at the minute. And the last thing you want is him going and playing against San Marino and, you know, someone puts an elbow in his cheek and his tooth set off again. Do you know what I mean? He's got to go and get another filling from, you know, Ruby Dentist or whatever. So,
other dentists aren't available.
I was going to say, I reckon he's going private, but then actually, no, Andy Robert is probably not.
No. But he just takes it up himself with some pliers.
Bit of string in the door.
Yeah.
The thing with it, though, is that he is the captain. We have to remember that. And he has to respect, and he does respect.
Well, I think that's why he's still making noises about maybe being available for this summer, you know, game. Yeah,
definitely. And he has an emotional attachment to that team. And I think that for that reason, he would have been uncomfortable missing the whole thing. But let's face it, we are hoping that he's not going to exert himself massively against San Marino. Or won't have to.
As I say, he'll just be trying to score. But fair play. Brazil, Alisson, Fabinho and Roberto Firmino all picked for Brazil against Panama. Anyone want to guess where Brazil are playing Panama?
I'm not going to guess, because I know the answer to this.
Do you?
Yeah.
Do you want to just say it?
Portugal.
Hey.
Why?
Because they're like the Harlem Globetrotters, aren't they, Brazil? Well, it's partly because all the players play in Europe, so it's just easier for them to do it here.
That's quite nice of them, isn't it?
Yeah. But also, I think they make more money by playing in different places.
It suits everybody. Like John says, they do try to say that they're like the travelling circus coming to your town and taking over.
Yeah.
But the interesting thing from a Liverpool player's perspective is that I don't know whether or not any of them are going to be playing two full games, because all three of them are going to be within a fight for their space.
Well, they've named Fabinho as a midfielder. I don't know if you've noticed that. Mm. No, they name positions, don't they, in international football, and he's been playing at right back largely for Brazil, but they put him in, which might not mean anything, but I think maybe suggests that they've been taking notice of how well he's been playing in midfield for Liverpool and going, yeah, maybe we'll pick him there.
Yeah, it looks like they've got a guy in there. I don't know how that happened, but I think for Fabinho, I'm less concerned than I am for Firmino.
Okay.
Because I think Fabinho is just new to the squad. He's just kind of getting his feet into it. He's now starting to feel a little bit more confident now they've picked him in a position he feels he can grow into. Firmino and Jesus, that battle has still not really been 100% nailed down. And now, as Brazil, you've got Vinicius Jr. to come into the mix. And they obviously, they've got the shadow of Neymar to come back eventually. So I think in terms of wanting to impress and wanting to exert themselves and put on a performance, I'm worried about Firmino more than the other two.
Okay, well, we'll have to wait and see. Sadio Mane. Making noise here. Sadio Mane is one of the ones to travel furthest. He's with Senegal and the both home games against Madagascar and Mali. The second one on Tuesday is a friendly, which makes you hope that we've lent on Senegal a bit and went, just play him in that first game. That's a group, you know, that's a qualifier. And then maybe, I think last time we went away, he limped off in the 89th minute with an injury that wasn't real. So, I mean, I don't know. Mane's been so crucial to us so far this season, and especially sort of in the last 10, 11 games, that he's the one that we really don't want anything to happen to.
Yeah, he's the main man for us now, isn't he? It's mad the way things go. People were slagging him off at the start of the season. But yeah, no, it was... Yeah, as you said, hopefully played the first game, sit out the second one with, I don't know, a broken fingernail or something, or, I don't know, a strain of the earlobe or something. I did see while he was away from the footage, the Koulibaly thing.
He's
funny, isn't he?
Yeah, no, I'm into that. He's got a good little social media game there, Sadio, as well, and he just seems quietly bouncing around. He was only here a couple of weeks, he was getting photographs in the Asda.
Yeah.
With In his full gear with babies and all that stuff, and now he's flipping off Man United. Go ahead, lad.
What a fella. Sadio just waved our second game.
I am slightly concerned about that, though, because it's the last game of the qualification, but it is a crucial game.
Like, Madagascar.
Yeah, they have to get a point.
Yeah, to finish top.
Yeah, they should do. Madagascar got a draw in the away game, so they should be enough. But the flip side to that is if they do qualify, and then I'm sure they'll be more than happy to see him for the next game.
Yeah, we'll just play the youth lads. You know, we give youth a chance, Senegal. So Holland have obviously called up Virgil van Dijk and Gini Ronaldo. I'll go to my Virgil van Dijk correspondent to my left, Lizzie Doyle. They play Belarus and Germany. That Germany game should be good. Both qualifiers. I've got to give a shout out to Simon Weedy, who's on our Facebook subscribers group, the Anfield Rap one, who pointed out to everyone, not just me, but I saw it, that he's done an interview in Holland. And I haven't seen anyone pick up this interview yet, but it's worth a look. It's from BN De Stem, and you can, you know, Google just translate stuff for you now, doesn't it? It talks about a lot of things, really. It talks about his mistake, Lizzie, and how, you know, he needs to accept that every now and again these things happen. He said that, quite funny, that Ryan Babel was saying to him just before it happened he was going to score, and then it does. But he just seems very relaxed. He seems very happy. He was talking about how made up he is, that he's got a song already, you know, been here less than a year and had a kind of, you know, a song from the cop and kind of what that meant to him. He just seems to be a man really enjoying his football and just really focused on what's ahead.
Yeah, and it's, do you know what, I love seeing this sort of relationship between a player and fans. It's a joy to watch. It reminds me, and I know we love all our players, we love our front three, but there's something about Van Dijk that's just absolutely clicked with the fans, and it feels like we've sort of gone, this is our man here, like he's ours and he's our main one. And I absolutely loved the post-match interview after Fulham. I did, because I want to see him laughing and just being like, shut up, you. Listen, I'm worth 75 million. I'm actually worth more. And I made a mistake and that's that. And he is so relaxed and you can see it on the pitch. And I just feel so safe when he's there. And he, I just love him. Like, I can't put into words. It's really good to know that he's enjoying his football and he's absolutely thriving under Jurgen Klopp. Definitely the best centre-half in Europe by a mile, in my eyes. And I haven't seen this interview, so I'm going to have a little look at it.
Yeah, it's worth a look. Yeah. A lot of it's obviously on the international stuff in the game against Germany, and they're making jokes about him being, you know, the German bogeyman after the kind of the Bayern Munich game. And I think he scored against them as well for Holland. He's got a centre-half partner, Mo, who's quite good at football. You're going to help me with the pronunciation right now. There we go. He's talked a little bit about Liverpool being a possibility. He looks like a fantastic footballer to me.
He would be a brilliant addition to our team / squad, depending upon if he was to come in. You'd imagine it'd be him and Gomez fighting out to play alongside Virgil. He is the kind of guy who would excite us in terms of his distribution play, but also he's a great defender. He can kind of fight it out with the Groks, even though he's still a young lad. I still think he can do that. I do suspect that there might be another team in Spain who've just bought one of his good mates who might also be interested.
I mean, there's going to be a queue.
Yeah, and you listen to some of the noises coming out of Liverpool and you think, are they going to spend that amount of money on that kind of player now? But then I'm sure that they said that last year and then they kind of did.
And it went really well.
It went all right.
So let's just keep doing it.
Kind of backtrack a bit on Van Dijk. I want to give him some love as well.
Go on. Yeah, that's fine.
I think part of the reason why everyone seems to have embraced him so bigly.
Yeah, we'll go with it.
Is that there was such a long build up to us getting him. Yeah. There was so much rigmarole of that. Will he, won't he? And we thought that we'd blown the chance and then it was going to have to go to Manchester City. And then the thought of him taking them further over the hill.
Oh, don't, Lizzie, you'll cry.
On the big dipper with Klopp.
Exactly. And all of that added to the drama. And I mean, let's face it, how many times have we seen something hyped up and then it doesn't deliver? He has delivered and then some. And he's not only been the impact that we all thought he would and hoped he would as himself to our team, but he has almost joined up everybody else. He seems to have become one of the key members in that dressing room really quickly. And I think that speaks well to him and his attitude, but also the recognition of everyone else is like, hey, we've got a player here. And it seems to have lifted everyone else's spirits and really given them that confidence and belief that, yeah, we can start attacking the big ones.
He's like a big, lovely orange hot water bottle, isn't he?
Oh, and a nice smelling one too.
Yeah. No, I just think,
I like that.
There you go, I think his game's come on, you know. I think he's kind of stepped in. I think the responsibilities assumed when he's walked through the door, it's kind of brought him on a little bit. If you read the Neil Lennon interviews, he's always waxing lyrical about him. When you read previous managers who he's had there, I think Powell said, you know, when he was at Southampton, he said that he could switch off sometimes. I think that's gone. I know he's made the mistake the other day, but I think that's gone. I think he realised.
He just gets bored because he's really good.
No, you never seen sprint, do you? But I think he can see everything now. He can see what's in front of him, see what he can win. On the De Ligt, did I pronounce that correct?
Aye.
You know, I know he's highly rated, but I think we also forget, just off on a tangent a little bit, just how well Joe Gomez was doing.
Yeah.
When we're talking about what the sense of that
was, getting back genuinely.
You know, I mean, we were talking about.
You're not worried about his injuries, though, Gomez.
Too injury prone for me.
No, not at all. Because he's had impact injuries. It's not muscular. It's not like, oh, it's a hamstring again, or like Dejan, where it's a stomach strain again. He's literally broken bones in his leg, and he's literally shattered his knee. And I think the way he came back from his knee injury, without any adverse, just shows you how well he was looked after, because those can be chronic injuries that will. I mean, we look at Daniel Sturridge; he's never really got anywhere near where he could get. So now, if it was muscular or hamstrings or one thing or the other, then fine, I'd take that. But as you think with Gomez, you can't legislate for literally broken bones.
Okay, we'll round through the last few. Miguel and Divock Origi will report for duty for Belgium's meetings with Russia and Cyprus. They're both qualifiers as well. Just quickly on Origi, I'm enjoying the big divvy revival. He's done all right the last few games coming on, hasn't he?
He seems to have found a little niche for himself as being that kind of energy and threat.
Nuisance on the left.
The late nuisance, as you want to call it. And I like the fact that he's back in the Belgium. He's got international recognition because hopefully that's going to give him a little bit of confidence as well. I don't know how many minutes he's going to get to play over the two games.
He's got good strikers,
they have got. Although I don't think Benteke's got picked today.
Really?
I don't think so. So, I mean, he's already ahead of him in the pecking order, which, you know, I think most Liverpool fans probably agree with.
Yeah.
But in terms of where he comes in and what we expect to see between him and the from him between now and the end of the season, I think the idea of giving him 20 minutes, 30 minutes to go out and really give you everything and really run at defenders, because sometimes in the tighter games we've had, it gets to a point where the movement can get a little bit static and you just need someone to kind of give them a...
Be a bit more direct.
Yeah, give the defenders a different look. And he's got that in his mind. And if you think about the goal that he scored...
Watford.
Where he just knew exactly what he was doing. He drove in and he was hitting the near post and it worked like a treat. And if he can just crystallise that and keep that in his mind for the rest of the time... We don't know when we're going to need him, but we are going to need him.
There's an interesting side with Belgium as well in the goalkeeping situation.
Mm.
With because obviously Sanders not playing for Liverpull at the minute, but Courtois being dropped and has had a horrible season at Real Madrid.
He's had an absolute stinker. He dropped when you actually said, I have no idea.
Yeah, he's
still
over.
Getting a
caller. And Courtois and Mingley famously don't get on at all. There's quite a
few people public just to get on with though, really.
Yeah. It's a growing number.
yeah. I mean, I can't see them dropping Courtois because he's only been dropped in the short term, but as a longer term thing, you do wonder whether there's more pressure on him now, given the situation he finds himself in, maybe wants to watch. But yeah, with the Iron Origi, surprised me as well.
Mm-hmm.
I thought him coming back, he was just there because we couldn't get him out on loan, and maybe that's the case, but... You know, when he's come on, he's hardly disgraced himself, has he? And he does provide maybe something a little bit different. And you know what? Maybe the change in going away and having a poor season and coming back has maybe woke him up a little bit. Mm,
I think so. I think when you look at where he was at Wolfsburg and the fact that he went through, I think, 3 managers in one season, none of whom could decide where they wanted to play him. So it was really disjointed. He didn't get a chance to go out and prove anything. And it's very similar to, if you look at Sturridge's loan spell with West Brom, having a bad loan spell has almost reminded them how good it is here. And he's been willing to get his head down. We've not heard a peep out of him in terms of any negativity about the times he wasn't training and wasn't getting near the squad. He's just got his head down, he's kept working, and now he's reaping his rewards.
He's right. Just to finish then, Harry Wilson and Ben Woodburn both in the Wales squad. Woodburn started and scored the winner against Trinidad and Tobago last night, which was really nice for him, because obviously he's had a really difficult season, both on loan and since he's come back to Liverpool. Apparently really grew into the game confidence-wise. Ryan Giggs was full of praise for him after the game, not just his performance and goal, but also his attitude in recent training sessions. So, and also talked a bit about loan spells and how sometimes the first one can't work out. So Ben Woodburn, don't write him off yet. He's still scoring for Wales and hopefully he's got a future at Liverpool.
Danny Ward played as well, didn't he?
Yep. He doesn't play for Liverpool.
No, so. I know, but still.
We're like ex-players. We'll be here all night. and then Croatia finally play Azerbaijan and Hungary, Dejan Lovren and all that. I mean, he's what he can really do with some games and hopefully he'll start those and we'll see where we're at with him and he might be an option for us as well, but... That's been the roundup. I hope you've enjoyed that. We've got a show out of that. I hope you've enjoyed all the calls before. Do support all the charities and events that we've talked about. But in the meantime, huge thanks to Lizzie Doyle, for Mel Stewart and to Andy Heaton. That's been The Weekender. Sports Social Podcast Network.